Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Earthnits, and welcome to another episode of the 2000 AD podcast. My name is Molchar, and I will be your host on this journey through the cosmos of the galaxy's greatest comic. I'm really sorry about that, Earthlitz. I picked up the Atraxium flu the other day, so yeah. Sorry if my voice went a bit funny there. Welcome to 2080 Thrillcast. We've got some great guests for you on this episode. We're going to be talking to Kat Symes, who is our soon-to-be ex-Reprographics droid. She's sadly leaving 2000 AD, but we're going to be chatting about some of the extraordinary work that she's done on the 2000 AD collections. We also have artist Bukuk and writer Tom Eglinton, who are going to be talking about their new series, Blunt, for the Judge Dredd magazine. Speaking of the Judge Dredd magazine, magazine 372 is out today from all good thrill stockists and 2080 web shop and apps, which includes this new Dredd World series by Boo and Tom, as well as Judge Dredd, Realm of the Damned. You've also got Lawless in there. Now, if you're not reading the magazine at the moment, seriously, you need to catch up with Lawless. It's Dan Abnett and Phil Winslay just doing absolutely fantastic stuff. Dan on top form, Phil's artwork just absolutely stellar. So big, big recommendation for the current series of Lawless. And of course, 2000 AD Prog 1981 is out this week also. That continues, the amazing lineup we've been having over the last few weeks, but Tainted, The Fall of Dead World concludes in this prog, and that's again been absolutely fantastic. Huge positive feedback from readers about that. So expect more from The Fall of Dead World in the future. Also out this week is Judge Dredd Case Files number 27. Now this is fairly unusual one in that it's purely written by John Wagner, the co-creator of Judge Dredd. We're kind of into that sweet spot where Wagner was fully back in control of the strip, and there's some amazing stories in there. That's available in paperback from all good UK bookstores and comic book stores. It's also available digitally through our apps and web shop. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have noticed that the prog numbers are slowly creeping up towards Prog 2000. And we're going to be having some Zarjaz news in the future episode about what we have planned. But make sure that you subscribe to the 2000 AD Thrill Mail, because every week we are listing the corresponding covers to a particular year. So this week is Prog 1981, and so we put all the covers from the year 1981 into the Thrill Mail, and we're asking you to choose your favourite. Send us your reply, and we choose the best favourite and the best reason. You win retro 2000 AD goodies like T-shirts and graphic novels. So make sure that you subscribe to 2000 AD Thrill Mail at 2000adonline.com/thrillmail. Make sure you open it every Wednesday. Goes out sort of around about 5 o'clock in the evening. Make sure your email inbox is set to receive this weekly thrillgasm from Tharg the Mighty. So let's get on with our guests for this episode. As I said, I had a chat with Kat Symes, who is our Reprographics droid, about her work bringing some of the greatest thrills that we've ever published back to life, back to glorious Technicolor or monochrome black and white life in our collected editions. Now, Kat has done some superlative work on all of our graphic novels, but also specifically things like the Mech Files, things like the Dan Dare collection that came out recently, the Daily Dreads. The work she's done to restore these things to how they should look is absolutely fantastic. So it was a pleasure to welcome Kat to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. So, like I said, it's very nice to welcome Kat back to the Thrillcast booth. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the collections that we've got coming out this year, which you've been kind of quite intimately involved in, really, haven't you?
Yeah, just a bit. I can say that.
So let's talk a little bit about the Cursed Earth Uncensored, which everyone is very excited about. We've just announced the special edition with the big reproduction of of some of the pages. I mean, this is material that has never been seen before. I mean, we've reprinted Cursed Earth, but these particular episodes have been effectively banned since the day they were published.
Yeah.
As somebody who handles the reprographics of that, what are the challenges of going back to something that is so old, has never been done before? It wasn't in the gorgeous Titan reprints of the 1980s. What are the challenges of bringing that back to life?
You know, actually, that was quite a bad one, because all we had to do, or to work with, was the actual progs, and the pages, needless to say, were in pretty bad condition. So there was no hope of finding any material for that. Thankfully, we did have some nice fans who did offer to have us a lend of the original pages for those episodes, which I'm quite happy to say is we got all of them.
Wow. So that's original, literally original artwork with the speech bubble stuck onto
everything,
it and everything.
Yeah.
Wow,
which was amazing. I mean, it doesn't sound a lot, 12 pages, but it sort of make or break the book. I mean, we've done the Cursed Earth so many times, but as I said, never like this before. Mm. So, I mean, I have actually read those episodes before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see why they were banned, but copyright is not the word really there, but they look beautiful. Yeah. I'm so happy we're now able to, at a stage where we can print those, because they, you know, reading half a book almost is like, well, you know, nobody wants to see that, so.
In terms of the scanning of the original artwork, obviously a lot of time has passed, and for those Earthlets who haven't seen it, we did a post on the 2080 Tumblr a while back.
Yes, we did.
Where we took some up close photos of these amazing pages. They're very old.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fading on things like speech balloons and a bit of fraying around the edge, and some of the ink has faded over time. As the person whose job it is to clean that up, what's the process that you go through when you have something as raw as that?
Well, firstly, it depends if I can actually use the material I've got. If it's no good or going to work, make a long time to make it work, then the first alternative is to try and find an alternative source. That's why we usually put the feelers out to fans, or maybe even to artists, anyone who could possibly get hold of what we're after, which is actually quite a rare thing. But if we haven't got anything, you know, to do that with, then it's really a case of making the best of what I've got. And, you know, that was the page scans. So it just requires a lot of going over the same areas again and again and again until it's legible. Some cases it's just you have an outline of a letter and you can't read it. So it's just a case of painstakingly filling in each detail as much as you can to make the page look as though it was a more recent edition. So
basically a lot of hours spent in front of Photoshop.
Oh, God. Cursed Earth actually took me 4 months to do.
Wow.
So having original artwork is a 5-minute job. It was so easy. But again, it's the colour ones that cause the most problems.
Yeah. Well, this the colour, if you pick up a copy of 2080 from 1977.
Yeah.
I had to think for a moment there. It's the colours you see now are not the colours as it was when it was first printed.
No. They're extremely vibrant. I mean, a good case scenario for that one is Sooner or Later, where we actually found the original film and acetate and the colour underlay for each page. Mm. So that is actual true representation of the colours. But the difficulty with that is if I want to replicate that in our reprinted stuff, you then cross over into the realms of
digital colouring.
Yes, thank you. Yes, colouring in the lines. Which, in my opinion, absolutely ruins it. So yes, I understand that the colours which are printed in our books should and were more vibrant, but you know, you might as well just colour on him and not bother. It's just, you know, it's a fine mix of keeping the colour and keeping the style. It's an old comic, and that is the way it's supposed to look. You know, you still have the patterns of the paper and the grain. And the thing is, with, you know, digitally colouring, you know, if you just did it from flat colours, you block out all the dots and the railway. Can't say that word either. It's all right.
The dots and the
moiré effect.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Right.
I've lost it now, right?
Because I noticed it, especially in the ABC Warriors books, the Mech Files that you did, where in one volume you're having to deal with centre spreads that are almost 40 years old.
Yes.
And then in the next one you're having to deal with extremely hyper-detailed, rich, painted artwork. And so the skill to be able to faithfully reproduce both of those kinds of looks is quite something, really.
That is mostly down to knowing each individual artist and knowing their style.
Sure.
In the case of like Siku's work.
Siku, yeah. Yeah.
You know, his page scans never come out good because they're so vibrant in colours, and trying to replicate that as a page scan is nigh on impossible because the colours would never be right because of the vibrancy of it. Whereas, say, Henry Flint's earlier stuff is a lot more pastels, neutrals. Mm. So you can easily wreck the work by overdoing it on the colour correction unless you know what the artist's work was originally like. Mm. I mean, their styles have changed through the years, but haven't changed so much that you can mess with it. So, you know, it's really a case of understanding each story and each artist because they're all completely different. No one process is applied to the same story.
Well, I think that's something not many people realise with reprint editions.
Yeah, it's very easy.
It's very easy to get them wrong, though, isn't it?
Oh, of course, yeah. And that's, you know, sadly one of the reasons that, you know, I'm worried about leaving is like, what will become of 2000 AD? Will you get complaints? Will you get, you know, that wasn't coloured right like that? That shouldn't be like that.
Sure.
I just hope my successor will, in time, understand the complexness of the job, because it's really not as straightforward as it seems.
Mm. Looking ahead, I mean, we're going to be reprinting, well, we're going to be printing material that you've worked on for quite a while yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've got collections of Misty, Monster, which, you know, are challenges in and themselves. Because, I mean, as you mentioned, scanning old comics is hard work.
We actually managed to get some very decent copies of Eagle.
Right.
So it wasn't too bad. And I actually enjoyed Monster better because it's absolute change from anything else we do. I mean, no disrespect to Dread, but, you know, I'm dreaded out at the minute. So,
sure.
But Monster, I really enjoyed the story, and it's something new to work on. Completely different from what we do on a sort of weekly basis. So I'm really hoping the fans will like Misty and Monster. And hopefully in the future, I'd like to see more classics like that being done.
Yeah.
Just something a bit different. It just, you know, mixes it up a bit.
Mm.
So, and really looking forward to seeing volume 2 of Dan Dare as well.
Yes.
Which I've already done.
Right, okay.
So, that is looking lovely. Hopefully my name will be on it still. But,
I'm sure it will.
I'm very pleased I got to do the second volume before I left.
Mm.
Definitely.
What was it about Dan Dare that you enjoyed working on?
It's Dan Dare. It's, you know, it's the comic that my dad read when he was small, and I've got his Eagle annuals, and you read it again for the first time as an adult and think, you know, it's not too bad, this. And you go back to it and you think, great, I get the privilege of working on this. You know, cult classic that's not been seen in nigh on 40 years and I get to do it. You know, it's just like, wow. I you know, pinnacle achieving moment of my career, I think, that one. Loved it.
As I said, you're going to be leaving us soon, which is a shame after how 40, many years at Rebellion?
It was 14 years last month.
14 years last month. Wow.
Yeah.
How have things changed in that period for you in your work?
That's an interesting one, actually, because when I started, the graphic novels weren't actually a thing we were doing. It was just the prog and the mag, and it sort of became a role. And obviously it got bigger and bigger, and we were doing the graphic novels on a full-time basis. And I sort of drifted into that department and made it my own job. I you know, it became my role. I sort of, it's been nurtured to the point where it is a job title in itself now.
Mm.
So it's almost like being my own boss. It is sort of my department, which I've nurtured for 14 years. I mean, you know, things have improved in terms of the software we use, where we source material from. I mean, you know, getting outside material from fans is always a great help if we can get it, because we can use the best material we can. In terms of, you know, Daily Dread, where we're missing the odd panel or episode and they come up trumps, it saves us an absolute ball ache. Because, you know, the archive, shall we say, is a bit like Warehouse 13. You don't know what you're going to get out there. And if you do find it, it's purely by chance. So, yeah, a lot of things have progressed. And as I said, I've worked on the graphic novel since day one. And in a way, I'm glad we're doing reprints of some stories, because I look back and look at something I did 14 years ago and think, oh, God, that's crooked, that's straight, that, you know, that's rubbish. I wouldn't do that now. I'd get shot for putting that out.
Mm.
And redo it with the experience that I have now so it looks even better than it did the first time round, and also pick up any mistakes which might have been missed the first time round, or, you know, it's always a progress of, you know, continuing to improve things and just... You know, at the end of the day, it's the comic that's going to look great because of it. It's, you know, it's love.
Hmm.
It really is. Yeah. You know, you have to care about it, and you know, because otherwise, it's just you're just whacking it out there. You know, you have to love what you do, and seeing the end result is, you know, for me, that's the most satisfying thing about it, really.
Yeah, it's always interesting looking at reprint editions from other publishers and thinking, well, someone has put this together, but they've not necessarily had the time or the experience.
And there's me thinking I could have done a better job.
I was trying to be diplomatic there.
it goes with the job, you know. Yeah. Being anal, and that is my job in a sense, is you know, attention to detail.
Mm, mm.
If I can't spot it, then, you know, you might as well not bother. So pretty much it goes with the job, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you mentioned the archive there, which...
Is an ongoing job.
I mean, it wasn't left to us in the best of conditions when Rebellion took over.
No.
But I popped up into the warehouse just the other day, and the change is remarkable.
Yeah.
What are the difficulties of storing these... colour separations, these acetates, in a useful order?
God, useful order. at the moment, there are many boxes which are just labelled as random, and they contain the pages from various progs and megs and different stories. And I think Luke put it best last week, actually. Only I can decipher them. It's like the Matrix. You pick one up, and unless you know the stories, you can say that goes to that prog or Meg in that story.
Mm.
And it's just been, unfortunately, in this pile, and it's going to take me a long time to put everything back in its proper place. Nobody's fault. Mm. It's hard. I think that comes from experience. From the 14 years of looking at everything, it's almost like I've got a photographic memory of, I can pick it up and think, and that goes there, that goes there.
Mm.
And I think, you know, nothing's labelled up there at all, so it's just going to be a very painstaking process of know your story, know your artist, pick it up, have a look at it, do you know it, yes, it goes back in that box, pretty much. And then make a list of anything that's missing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's interesting that you talk about the concept of love and of loving what you do and that sort of feeding into your knowledge of it.
Mm.
14 years is a long time to work on anything.
Yeah.
Particularly just one publication, such as 2000.
And I don't get bored of it either.
Right, excellent.
I don't. I just love it. It's just, you know, I could be doing things like dental pamphlets or something. But no, I get to come into work every day and read comics. It's brilliant, you know. I do really love my job. You know, that's when, in some respects, I'm sad I'm leaving, but I'm sure you won't see the last of me just yet.
Excellent. I'm very glad to hear that.
I'll be on hand.
Well, I mean, this, like I said, this year alone, we've got multiple titles.
Amazing
still
titles,
to come,
yeah.
With your handiwork on them. So, really, on behalf of 2000 AD, Rebellion, on behalf of everyone who's ever read one of our reprints, thank you very much, Kat, for all your massively hard work over the years, because certainly when we do shows and we get people who come up to us who used to read 2000 AD, seeing their eyes light up.
That's what makes it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah, that's the gratitude that I get, which I love. And, well, as I said, you've got, and not only just this year, but next year as well, you've got my work coming out. So, yeah. And said it's not done yet, but as I said, it is with regret. But time to move on, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So yeah, bye bye.
So great to hear Kat talking about her work on the 2080s graphic novel, and she will be very sorely missed by everybody who works here. Now we've been talking about the past and the future. So let's talk about the present. Joe Strad magazine number 372 is out today with a new series by Boo Cook and Tom Eglinton called Blunt. We got them on the end of a slightly dodgy Skype line to talk about this brand new series, which is set in Dredd's world, but on a planet far, far away. So to talk to us about their new series, Blunt, in the Joe Strad magazine, it's great to welcome Boo Cook.
Hello!
And Tom Eglinton to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Thanks for agreeing to chat to us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, mate.
No worries, no worries. So, Joe Strad Magazine 372, which is out today. New series. Now, this has been in development for a little while, hasn't it, Tom?
Yes.
Since I was a child.
Boo, in that case, explain to us the concept of Blunt.
Well, basically, he's... what, you mean how it began, or...?
The basic concept of the story.
The basic concept of the story is there's a freshly terraformed world, and there's like a little sort of pioneer colony on there trying to make their way, and some things go awry, and there's a chap on there who is the son of Uplift parents. It's set in the Insurrection universe. Uh-huh. So anyone who's familiar with that will know that Uplifts are the big gorilla types, and so he's the son of two of them. But or is he? There's a mystery. Perhaps, Tom, you would like
yeah,
to...
Yeah, he's kind of basically part uplifter, part mutie, and he's kind of undergone this kind of bizarre mutation as a child that's kind of left him almost like the perfect native for the planet. So the story is sort of mostly to do with a ship crashes that's carrying kind of agricultural equipment, and it's essential for the colonists to get to the kind of next stage of development. So they have to go on this rescue mission, and to do that, they have to enlist the help of Blunt, and he's basically this very unreliable, unpredictable, kind of loose cannon of a person. And so it kind of follows that kind of setup.
He's like a cross between the Hulk and Ray Mears.
Yeah. That's a perfect summing up of him.
So, like I said, this has been in development for a long time. I mean, Boo, you just said since you were a child. What's the which I assume was just yesterday. What's the genesis of this strip? How did it come to actually be on the page now?
Well, I've got a feeling that I might have got the ball rolling. Tom will probably kill me. I think I wanted to create a character, basically, who kind of stood out and was easily recognisable and really fun to draw. So I set about creating this character that had all my favourite characters in there. So, you know, there is a bit of the Hulk, there is a bit of Ray Mears, there's a bit of Dredd, there's a bit of Wolverine, there's a bit of Hellboy, I sort of vaguely wanted him to be in some kind of terraforming field of expertise. But beyond that, I didn't really have much of a clue, as is usual with my concepts, and so I handed it over to Tom.
Yeah. I think he was more hairy to begin with as well. He's a bit more ape man.
Yeah. Matt Smith did have a little tinker with the plot, because he was more to begin with, but Matt suggested bringing it into the Insurrection universe, and I think he might have even said, "Can he be part Uplift?" And
that came from him. Yeah.
I mean, we always jump at the chance to get Simian based antics in the mix. So no problem.
Yeah, we have Simians in most of the strips we work together on. So.
So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned there about the Insurrection universe. Now, for those listening who don't know, Insurrection was the Dan Abnett and Colin McNeil series, which was all about colonists fighting for their survival, and then Mega City One steams in and strips the Uplift, who are these genetically engineered apes, who are basically heavy lifters, and robots of all the rights that they had been given under the defence of the homeworld. So that world then rebels, and, it got quite grim, didn't it? Because Dan had the SJS turning up with this armada that hunted them down. What kind of elements, aside from obviously Uplifts and things like that, what kind of elements of that universe are we going to see in Blunt? Is that rebellion going to be something that impacts on the way that these characters think?
I think we sort of went in a different direction with this, sort of consciously. I mean, I definitely did with the story, so that it's a bit more like a kind of a very remote colony. And so it's kind of quite removed. This is probably more to do with just the kind of survival on a planet itself, and the kind of effects that the planet has on the people trying to sort of survive. So yeah, it's kind of pretty different, I would say.
I mean, that makes me think of things like old trips like Death Planet and Hell Trekkers, you know, that kind of, you know.
Hell Trekkers, definitely. Yeah, that sort of thing. And we kind of sort of try to put some of that in the mix, and then also maybe have this kind of new feel to it. You know, there's quite a lot of sort of weird, maybe ecological sort of ideas that we've managed to put in that are not too sort of, not sort of too hippie dippy sort of, you know, nonsense. They're kind of like genuine, you know, how would a planet kind of try and control a species and sort of you know, ecosystems and how they kind of interact, and so kind of weird stuff like that. And hallucinogenic mushrooms as well.
Of course, perfect. So Tom, when did Boo first mention this concept to you?
It sort of had a kind of weird development, because it started years ago just as an idea in itself that we both, as I remember, we sort of sat down and I had an idea for a story and Boo had an idea for a character, and that kind of sort of collided and became Blunt.
I think his initial tagline was something like Bluto versus Plato on Pluto or something. A heavy hitter with a brain on a faraway planet. That was the basic gist, I think.
And yeah, we wanted kind of this, I don't know, like a cool character kind of knew, that was sort of intuitive with this kind of world that he's on. Originally, I mean, it was very, it was sort of a pretty different story. It was a sort of science fiction thing, but it was all to do with, I think the first incarnation was to do with people that were kind of customizing their own bodies with this sort of weird bioware. So it was very different. And then gradually it's kind of changed and become this. I think, is that right, Boo? I can't really remember. It's that long ago since we started it.
No, that sounds about right. Yeah, we've traded in these little things that were called second skin patches that you patch onto yourself and you can sort of transmogrify your body. But now it's more the planet itself which is responsible for the changes. There's always been a bit of a John Carpenter thing
to
it as well.
We're so big on that. Just a sort of idea of what would happen in the thing if it successfully took over a planet. That, not specifically for this, but just as a general idea, I also kind of find that interesting. Mm-hmm. Like maybe the thing is actually a force for good.
Well, I was talking to Rob Williams the other day about Breathing Space, Judge Dredd World series that he did on the moon. And we were talking about how the other environments apart from Mega City One always seem to have that feel of the kind of Wild West and the Wild Frontier kind of aspect to them. Was the kind of Wild West, kind of Wild Frontier thing, did it automatically come to the fore, or was that something that you put in? Because this really is like an untamed wilderness.
Yeah, it's untamed wilderness. I kind of like, I guess I sort of tried to steer it a bit more towards... more like this kind of jungle environment. Mm. So it still has that kind of Wild West feeling, certainly the colonies like that. But then it kind of moves more into this kind of, very plush wilderness as opposed to a kind of very barren wilderness, which I guess is the usual thing. So I kind of took that and tried to do something a little bit different. And certainly visually, it makes it very satisfying to look at. It's really rich, this kind of constantly evolving jungle scenario they're in. That worked really well.
Mm. So there's a kind of Heart of Darkness element to that.
Definitely. And sort of like maybe the thing mixed with, there's sort of all those kind of elements, you know. And again, it was sort of looking into those and, like Wrath of God and that sort of thing, looking into all those kind of types of story and trying to just kind of steer it through so it's not too like too much like any of those, if that makes sense.
With Boo, looking at some of the advanced artwork that I've seen on Matt's screen, it feels like... there's a bit of a kind of Massimo Ballardinelli influence in the way that you've sort of brought this world to life. What kind of world are you creating visually for the strip?
I don't know. Certainly, if there is a Massimo influence there, it's not a conscious one. But it's nice of you to say so, though. I'll take that. I love the opportunity to portray worlds, you know, that are very imaginative, and this one has got a lot going on, you know. And I'm never content to do just a basic jungle scene. There'll be eight types of new rhinoceros in there, and, you know, so it's great having free rein to just let my imagination go, really. And I discovered a brush pen as well, which has been very good fun during this. Blunt has taken me, like, I'm just finishing the last episode now, and I started it last April. And can I just...
It's a labour of love.
Add, I've been fitting things in. I'm not that slow.
I mean, what's it like seeing something that you've been thinking about for so long finally come to fruition?
It's really good. It's nice because it's finally getting out into the world.
Yes, quite unbelievable.
It's also nice because it has changed so much, I think, from when we started. And actually, I was a little bit tentative when I kind of started this new kind of version of Blunt for the magazine. But once we got going, it's really sort of come into its own. I'm really, really pleased with it. And the artwork's amazing, I should also add, because it's well worth Boo ruining a year of his work, because it's fantastic. It looks really great.
It would be nothing without the scripts.
Oh, you guys.
Oh, you stop. No, you.
Yeah, it's weird. I've got about 8 years worth of sketchbooks here with like hundreds of drawings of Blunt's face in them. And I knew the final version was in there, but I just kept drawing it and drawing it and drawing it. And when Matt suggested the Uplift connection, it all sort of slotted into place, his look, and gave him some nice long gorilla arms as well. Yeah, he's great fun to draw.
And one thing that we're always searching for as a publication are recurring characters, because at the end of the day, it's always nice to, you know, follow someone on a long journey. Is Blunt a character who you plan to return to after this series is finished?
Yeah, we'd love to do that. We've certainly got some interesting kind of ideas of where it could go. But, you know, it's always a case of sort of how it will be received. But, yeah, definitely we've got some really interesting sort of directions to go in with him. But, yeah, we probably don't want to say too much about that now.
So everyone receive it really well, yeah? And
yeah, yeah, do that and you'll get an amazing payoff.
So in terms of this first series, for those people who haven't picked up the magazine yet and may be thinking of doing so, where are we at? What's the situation in that first episode? You know, what's the elevator pitch for the beginning of Blunt?
Tom.
Yeah, I guess the first episode's just with the following the fortunes of the colonists and the this sort of supply ship that crashes, and they've got to make these decisions about rescuing it to get their equipment back, or their whole colony's going to die, it's going to finish. And so they kind of got to make this, you know, almost this pact with the devil, who's Blunt, who is this kind of very kind of wild card, loose cannon, and really it's partly framed with a young girl called Ilya wanting to go on a quest to save her mother, and she's on the ship, so it's kind of that. And yeah, we just get a taste of all the characters in the first episode.
Yeah, it's much more of an ensemble piece than I thought it was going to be to begin with, which is good. There's lots of different characters in it. Although I will hold my hands up and say that I didn't quite realise in the first episode that some of the characters were going to be in the whole thing. So you've got like some people talking in the crowd. Well, I just thought, yeah, I'll make them look like the Ramones. And they're
I just did that to mess with you, man.
Yeah, I kind of like them now anyway. But it's,
yeah, so do I.
It's very inclusive as well, isn't it, I think, you know? And I don't think it was like we never spoke about making it inclusive, but as you know, lots of different age people, lots of different ethnicities, and I think there's even a lesbian in there who never does anything remotely lesbianoid, and so you know, she you wouldn't really know if it wasn't for this podcast, but that's because all these people are just people. And you don't have to have them like snogging a woman or anything. They're just people.
Yeah, I think we wanted to kind of just have, just really, really have fun with the characters and kind of have quite rounded characters as well. You know, we kind of like the antagonist is kind of a marshal called Marshal Hergill, and he's kind of like this, not quite a failed judge, but he's just, you know, he's quite nuanced and. And yeah, we've got a lot of kind of interesting characters in there. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun kind of coming up with it.
Thank you to Kat and Boo and Tom for talking to us on this latest Thrillcast. I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Earthlets, please do make sure that you give us a little bit of feedback, whether it's on iTunes, SoundCloud, Podomatic or social media. We really love to hear what you think about episodes. We've got some great guests coming up this summer. I can't tell you about them at the moment, but make sure that every fortnight you tune in and keep up to date. on what's happening with the galaxy's greatest comic. Splundig Verthrig Earthlets. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2000 AD is in orbit every Wednesday from all good newsagents and comic book stores. 2000 AD is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2000adonline.com, or you can download the free 2000 AD app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2000 AD classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000 AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. In the meantime, all hail Tharg the Mighty and Splundig Verthrig Earthlets.